Let's bow together for prayer. We thank you, our Father, for your great gifts to us. We thank you for the message of this morning of the power of life, power of resurrection, power to bring a new experience to dead bones. And we pray, our Father, that you would help us in this hour to make good use of the fellowship that we have together. For we pray it in Jesus' name. Amen. Let me begin by saying I'm nervous about what we're doing this morning. I would probably be more comfortable if I were preaching and had a message and had it all organized and written out, and the goal was to say it, get it done, and leave. But this is kind of an informal thing where we're trying to accomplish certain things, and I didn't know how many would be here. I didn't know whether it'd be 3 people in here or 25, which kind of changes the environment somewhat. But I'm nervous for other reasons. I don't know where to begin, and I've thought about this. I've wrestled with it for several weeks. Where do I start? And I still don't know where to begin. I used to lecture in these classrooms. Now, I am not a scholar, but I did work here at the seminary for 20 years until I retired in 1999. And I used to lecture on preaching. And you know the story about those that can teach, and those that can't teach teaching. Well, that's true of preaching also, at least it was in my case. But I used to lecture on introductions, how to give an introduction. And one of the things I used to say was you should have an introduction that's clear and precise, and you should only have one introduction to a sermon, not 2 or 3. Now, when you listen to your sermon tomorrow, if you're not a preacher, you see how many introductions are, and sometimes there are 3 or 4, and you wonder, when is he going to get to point 2, and he's not even up to point 1 yet. And I've thought of introductions, and I'm going to violate my own theory that there should only be one introduction and to tell you about some of the things that have come to mind when I think about being here. I can remember when the number 6 trolley, now some of you are from Pittsburgh, so you have no vague idea what the number 6 trolley is, used to run from Olney Avenue, I think it went up Ogontz Avenue, and not far from the seminary up to Willow Grove Park, which was an amusement park. And some of you have no idea that Willow Grove Park, which is now a mall, used to be an amusement park. It's also an exit on the turnpike where you get off to come to the seminary if you don't know the shorter way. But when I was probably 12 years old, I used to make that trip by myself or with friends from the neighborhood out in West Philadelphia, where we'd take the trolley into the subway and the Broad Street subway and the 6 trolley and go to Willow Grove Park. 12 years old, that's 63 years ago. And I think here we are talking about seniors, and I have memories that go back 63 years. That's a long time. And I'm reminded of an image that came to me. I'd hardly say it was divinely inspired, an image that I've really tried to work out, varied it a little bit, but I have this picture of a car, and you're driving it, or I'm driving it, either one, doesn't matter, and we're stopped at a railroad crossing, perhaps in a small town, and the gate is down, and there's a passenger train going by, and we're sitting there in the car, and on the side of each car is marked a generation. And the generation in the car right in front of us, this is a passenger train speeding down the track, is marked silent generation. Now that's my generation, born in 1924 to 46. And that generation is almost past. There aren't as many people in that car as there used to be. Some of us have died. More of us are dying regularly, as a matter of fact. So if we were born in 24, what would we be now? I can't do the arithmetic. 24. for?
83.
83, is that what it would be? And if we're born in 46, we would be 60? 62, you're right. Okay, 62 to 83. So we're dying. That generation, called the silent generation because we never had anything worthwhile to say, that generation is passing away. Now, the generation in the car in front of us is called the greatest generation, at least it was by Tom Brokaw. That's people born 1900 to 1924. They're almost all gone. There were seven presidents born in that generation. I think only two of them are alive, George Bush and what's his name? You know, Habitat for Humanity. There you go, that one. I think those are the only two left because Gerald Ford just died. You know how many presidents were born in my generation? None. It's really statistically an anomaly. Pardon me?
I said, that's interesting.
It's weird, but our generation was the silent generation. You know, what do we do? Nothing. But the next generation is the boomers, and they're coming along fast. Many of you are in the boomer generation. Two of the presidents were born in 1946, the beginning of your generation, and they, of course, were George Bush and Bill Clinton. We're both born in 46, and so they represent the earliest of your generation that are moving into the 60s, age 60. And pretty soon, your generation and the fact that my generation is living longer is going to swell the number of seniors, those over 65, from 36 million in the United States to 72 million. It's going to double the number of seniors in the United States. So we're a growth industry. We're a growth industry. Now, the next generation.
I missed it. Could you give me the dates and the name for that generation that was Clinton and Bush? I missed that one.
Now, these dates, these dates and names vary from author to author. So
sure.
If you look in one book, they're this. You look in another book, and they're that. But the three that I've mentioned are 0 to 24.
Right.
And 24 to 46, and 46 to 64 is the boomers, boomer generation. And then you come to Generation X and Generation Y and the millennial generation. You look down the track, and there are little kids in that car furthest down the track, nursery. Now, we divide people in the church the same way, only we call them seniors and older adults and young adults and 20-somethings. And we divide them the same way. But there are little kids down in that last car. And what I have found in my own experience is that, and I'm in one of the first cars now, the train is moving pretty fast. But some of the people in those cars down the track, some of the people in some of your generations, especially the younger ones, you're not even aware the train is moving. I'm kind of jealous of that. And yet at the same time, there's an unreality about it. The train is moving 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's moving. If you were born today, the train has started to move. And we're all moving toward old age. We're just all moving that way. Now, of course, there is one way to avoid it, as you know. But most of us are moving toward old age and the experiences of old age. So when we talk about an experience, it's a common experience. Now, I know there are other seminars today on other subjects, disability and this and that and something else. But everyone who is alive is moving toward old age. It's a common experience and something to which we all need to give attention. Yesterday, I received an email from somebody, and I'm going to read part of it to you. It just came yesterday. I'm going to introduce that by saying something about myself, and I apologize for doing that. This is one of the introductions that's, you know, you should only have one. When I retired, I didn't have anything to do. They take your business cards away from you. And you lose your identity. Business card was my identity. My job was my identity. What do you do? So I looked for things to do. I don't play golf. I came to realize that any morning when you get up and say to yourself, what am I going to do today, is the beginning of a bad day. At least that's my experience. Maybe it's not yours. Maybe you're so busy with work you yearn for a day like that. Now, I don't mean that you need to be busy with something, but you need to have something on your schedule, going out and ministering to people, playing golf, playing tennis, going for a long walk, taking your wife to the mall, whatever. You need something going on in your life, I think, as against having nothing going on in your life, to have meaning in your life. And, of course, my life had been pretty much focused around tasks that I had. And I was looking for something to do. And after 2 or 3 years of doing some other things, one of them, incidentally, is working for Alpha Pregnancy Services, which has a table I saw down at the end of the hallway here, which I encourage you to look at, trying to help them raise money. But one of the things I developed, and I apologize for talking about it myself, but it relates to what we're going to do today. One of the things I developed was this. I thought, maybe I could develop a ministry to seniors, and maybe I could encourage ministry to seniors in my denomination, which is the PCA, the Presbyterian Church in America. And so I started to do that. And the normal way that you do things in a denomination is you have national meetings, and you invite people from all over the country to come to Atlanta, in our case. And maybe one-tenth of the churches are represented there, and I thought that's not probably the best way to do it. So let's take seminars out to where the people are, and I planned a 3.5-hour seminar to encourage ministry to seniors. And in part, I'm saying that to say this, the orange sheet, now that color is not really orange. It's not orange at all, I guess. It's golden age. It's a color you get at senior staples where they have things coordinated with the life of seniors. But that sheet describes a seminar that we're going to have at Proclamation Church in Bryn Mawr in May 8th, I think it is, on a Saturday. So I'm simply sharing that with you to promote it, to promote that seminar. It's kind of a larger version of what we're going to do today, a considerably larger version of what we're going to do today. But when I started this when I started this seniors project, I realized that prayer is an important part of any project, at least it seems to me that it is. And I'm not what you would call a prayer warrior, by no means. And I asked for volunteers at a women's meeting in Atlanta one day when I was presenting the seniors project to pray for the seniors project in the denomination. And out of about 400 women that were present, two women returned the form indicating that they would like to pray for this seniors project. One of those women lives in Indiana. I've only met her once. And one lives in Virginia. As it happens, I've seen her 2 or 3 times in the past 4 years. And these people pray regularly for the seniors project. And I would be very surprised if they have not prayed for this meeting this morning, since I tell them what I'm doing. We keep in touch by email once a week at least, over 4 years. And this one woman sent me this email, and it has to do, in fact, with the meeting. And she says several things about this meeting. And then she wrote this, and I'm going to read it to you. I don't like to be read to, but I thought you might be interested in hearing what she has to say. My sisters and I are learning and realizing so much as we walk through Mama's increasing frailty. We have been disappointed that so few people from the church she helped to start back in the 1970s have called or come by to visit her, especially in weeks when she has been too weak to attend church. But then we have pondered and realized that we too have rarely called elderly members when they have begun to vanish from the pews. We have acknowledged their frailties and have prayed for them. But how easy to forget and to dismiss. And this next phrase just caught me. Aging as a normal vanishing act. How easy to forget and to dismiss aging as a normal vanishing act instead of as an urgent call for face-to-face ministry as any illness or surgery. What a shameful realization. But I hope it makes us more merciful in face-to-face ministry than we have been before. I was just struck by that phrase, a normal vanishing act. I was going to read Leviticus, the last chapter. You might want to look at it sometime. It says some things about aging. There's a way there described to value people if you want to pay a price instead of committing some person to temple ministry. It's a little bit like Al Gore flying on a jet and paying whatever this is, the money he pays to reduce pollution while he flies on his private jet. I'm not trying to be critical of him politically or anything like that. Don't mean that. But you could pay a price instead of committing yourself, or you could buy somebody back from commitment to the temple service. And there are prices given. And the price, I could check the Bible, it's the last chapter of Leviticus. It's an obscure kind of passage. There's a certain price for a 20 to a 60-year-old, but for a lot less price, you can buy back somebody over 60. It's about a third the value. And that's kind of the way we look at old age, I think, when we're not in old age. I was in a seminar that I was having somewhere recently, and somebody said, if you have a congregation with 500 20-somethings, you say, what a wonderful opportunity. If you have a congregation with 500 older people, you say, what a terrible problem we have. And it's reflective, I think, of the way we handle old age to some degree, to some degree. Now, we do want to move on, or I want to move on. Let me ask you to turn to the sort of packet of materials that you have. That is the senior color, golden age to the blue. Look at that little packet of materials. If you don't have that, let me just call a timeout and see that you get it. All right, let me pass it all back. When I developed these seminars, I realized I needed a tool. I needed a vehicle to lead the seminars, some vehicle that would be useful. So I developed this manual that I have just one copy of here. I'll send this around so you can see it. This manual was written by approximately 100 people in the PCA. Doctors, nurses, ministers, lay people with experience and expertise in seniors ministry of differing kinds. The manual has been our tool for use in the seminar. Pass this around just so you can plant some. If you'd like to pass it.
Can that be purchased through the PCA? Or
PCA Bookstore.
PCA Bookstore.
We give them out at the seminars, which is one reason we have to charge for the seminars. We give a manual to each participant, and I might as well pass this around too. while we're passing books. We also give this out to each church that comes. This is a book called Caring for Aging Loved Ones. I have a number of books on seniors ministry and have looked into it quite thoroughly. I've probably looked at least 100 books relating to seniors ministry. I suspect I've looked at 1,000 articles. I don't know that, but there's a vast amount of literature on seniors and seniors ministry because there are so many facets to seniors ministry, as you will see when we look at these topics. This is the best book that I know of. It happens to be evangelical because it's produced by Focus on the Family. It is available for purchase in almost any Christian bookstore, and as a matter of fact, I saw two copies out here on the table for sale. They were paperback. I think they were $20 list price. I don't want to clutter the samples passing this way. I need somebody in the middle to do it at the same time. That's the best book on what it says, Caring for Aging Loved Ones, what its title says. I also bought this last night. I buy books on seniors ministry and collect them. This one's called Last Laughs. It's cartoons from the New Yorker magazine. And I thought, well, that would be fun. I'll get that. So I got it and looked at it last night. I don't know where to start this one. All right. But that Senior's Manual is the book that I want to say a word about. This is the table of contents from that Senior's Manual. It's actually the second page in the manual itself. And I'm not sharing this page with you because I'm trying to sell the book. If I'm trying to sell the book, I'd have copies here to sell. But I just would like to go through the topics that are in this book. Now, that's what we do at the seminar in more detail. In order for you to see that seniors ministry is a complex issue, being a senior is a complex thing. I think I'm probably older than anybody in the room, so I have an advantage over many of you. You've never been a senior. It's a complex thing. My wife and I, 1 week last year, now I mean about a year ago, had 8 doctor's appointments in 1 week. And some of them, in her case, I would embarrass her if she were here, but she's not here, were pretty serious. She had a heart valve replaced in January. She had a lobe of her lung removed in April. And has wrestled with other issues. She's doing fine. She walks 2 miles a day and looks after our grandchildren regularly. And so she's doing fine. But there are things about being a senior that you're not aware of because you're not there yet. And I would suspect if I were in your position and came to this meeting this morning, what I might be looking for is ideas, suggestions for ministry. And that's okay. We'll try to make some suggestions, or at least offer you some suggestions. But to jump to that is a little bit like going to a mission field and not understanding the language and not understanding the experiences that people on your mission field are going through and not understanding the prospects of the people in your mission field, just jumping into a mission field. Now, you might still do some good. If you're a medical missionary, you can help somebody in one way or another, even though you don't know the culture and all the things that are going on. But you can't do as much good as you might be able to do if you were to study the field a little bit and try to make yourself as experienced as you can in a particular area. So this manual has been developed to help people to understand what senior life is about. The writers, as I say, are all PCA. Every writer on this page is a PCA person. They come from all over the country. number of them are from 10th Presbyterian Church. Four medical writers on here from 10th Presbyterian Church, an orthopedic surgeon, a heart surgeon, a psychiatrist, and a dentist. Two of the ministers from 10th Presbyterian Church have written for this, and their names would be listed here. But people from all over the country have contributed on all of these various topics. Now, if you will look at the next page, you will see a sample page from the manual. I haven't just picked these sample pages at random, but I have tried to pick pages that would give some logical flow to what we're trying to do here this morning. You will see that the manual itself goes from introduction to mobilizing for ministry, to health, to spiritual issues, to education, to financial and legal issues, to physical environment, and then finally at 7 comes to ministry to seniors and ministry by seniors. So there is a logical flow to it, and I hope some kind of logical flow to what I'm going to try to share this morning. So will you look at the page that is titled up at the top, Introduction F, Biblical Imperatives. This is a page, as I say, that comes directly out of the manual. Actually, it came out of my computer, so it looks a little bit different from the manual itself. The Bible makes it very clear, at least it does to me, that we are called upon to minister to seniors. We may neglect that. I talked to a minister this morning, and I wouldn't want to embarrass him, and I certainly don't mean to criticize him. But I had talked to him and written to him previously about a senior seminar, and he indicated to me this morning his church has no seniors. And I didn't want to get into a discussion, but I assume there are no nursing homes in the area and no elderly people live in the area, and there's no assisted living community, and I assume the people that are there don't have aging parents and grandparents. We're called upon to minister to seniors, even those of us that are in churches with younger people. The woman that wrote that note that I read to you about seniors being a vanishing act, ministers with her husband, and I'd hate for you to identify her, she would be embarrassed, but they minister, he's a retired chaplain, they minister in a church that's adjacent to a Marine Corps training base. So they have all young people. She said there is one senior in our congregation, but she has a heart for seniors, and the Bible calls us to minister to seniors. The Old Testament message, look down at the fourth quotation. I'm going to read it. Fourth quotation. This is on page introduction F. Do not take the cloak of a widow as a pledge. When you are harvesting in your field and you overlook a sheaf, do not go back and get it. Leave it for the alien, the fatherless, and the widow, so that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt. This is why I command you to do this. Do you see the Old Testament message? You all know it well. It's very simple. It's 3 points. It makes a good 3-point sermon. You were a slave in Egypt. I delivered you. Therefore, you will minister to aliens, that is strangers, orphans, and seniors, in that case, widows. Very simple message, basic. You were slaves in Egypt, I delivered you, therefore you will minister to seniors, particularly widows in this case, who were particularly vulnerable. Look at the first quotation, and I will say a word about it, and you know it of course. Honor your father and your mother so that you may live long in the land the Lord your God is giving you. Do you know how that's interpreted in the larger catechism? You may not. You should look at it. It's interpreted this way. That command does not refer only to your fathers and mothers. It refers to all seniors. This is a larger catechism. Honor all seniors. Biblical imperative. It's all through the Bible. And as a matter of fact, it goes on to say it refers to all superiors. I'm not sure you would agree with that interpretation. It refers to school teachers in terms of their children. Their children should honor them because of this command. It refers to police officers, that you should honor and respect police officers because they are your superiors in their area of expertise and leadership. It refers to ministers, to elders in the church, and of course it refers to parents, but to all seniors. And then there are warnings in the Bible. Look at the last one. I assume there's some imagery here. The last one under warnings. The eye that mocks a father, that scorns obedience to a mother, will be pecked out by the ravens of the valley, will be eaten by the vultures. I don't want to make that your life verse or make it the verse for the day. But the Bible is very clear in its commands and warnings. And then will you look at the last verses on the front of the page. Recognize this sign of social chaos. For a son dishonors his father, a daughter rises up against her mother, a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, a man's enemies are the members of his own household. And this from the Olivet Discourse, brother will betray brother to death and a father his child. Children will rebel against their parents and have them put to death. And the last one, the young will rise up against the old, the base against the honorable. Are any of those verses characteristic of our society? Even of our churches. Even of our churches and the way we treat seniors. In our congregations, in our families, and in the community, in the nursing homes that are around us. The invisible seniors just disappear. It's, how did she say it? It's a normal vanishing act. To become a senior is just a normal vanishing act. You disappear. One of the things I've found as a senior is I really rather desperately would like to be counted one. Just one, not 1.5, but I don't want to be counted 0.5. I want to be counted one. And sometimes that's difficult, except for one informal meeting on some unrelated subject. This is the first time I've been in a classroom at Westminster Seminary in 8 years. I don't get a paycheck anymore. I haven't gotten a paycheck from anybody for 8 years. I get an occasional honorarium, and that's important to me. Not because of the money, although money is an issue when you become a senior, unless you have a lot more than most of us are going to have. Money is important because it's an affirmation. Most of you work. I assume some of you work at home in tasks that may be more important than working in an office or a career. But some of you work and get a paycheck. And that paycheck, I want to remind you, although you may not agree with me, is an affirmation. It's not just money to put in the bank and buy things, but it affirms to you that what you do has value. You put in a week, you get a paycheck. You put in a month, you get however it works in your particular thing, or you serve somebody for an hour and you get paid for something, whatever. It's an affirmation. And I miss that. The affirmation that what I'm doing has some value. So there's something going on about this vanishing act thing where you disappear off the radar screen, and the loss of a paycheck is one of the transitions you have to go through when you become a senior, and I'll say more about transitions. So there are biblical imperatives. Turn the page over, if you will, and look on the back. I have here the example of the Father, the example of Jesus, the example of the church. You know, of course, about that passage. Their widows were being overlooked in the daily distribution of food. So the 12 gathered all the disciples together and said, "Brothers, choose 7 men from among you who are known to be full of the Spirit and wisdom. We will turn this responsibility over to them and we'll give our attention to prayer and the ministry of the word." So the deacons were appointed to look after the seniors in the church. And again, it was widows in particular. And that's the charge of the deacons. Deacons find other things to do rather than do that. They worry about what color wastebaskets they should buy for the church. And should they get the church vacuumed or have a professional come in and do it? Whatever. They find all kinds of things to do. Collect the offering, count the money. And it's actually often the whole ministry of mercy that can get squeezed out in the light of these other pressures that fall on the board of deacons. When I was young and was in the PCUSA, or was it UPC, whatever it was then, we had 3 boards. And there was the elders, and there was the deacons, and there was the trustees. And the trustees looked after the building. But then the trustees and the deacons kind of got merged, and now the deacons look after all the financial affairs of the church too. So the ministry of mercy often doesn't get done, and particularly seniors' ministry doesn't get done the way it ought to be done. And in many other cases, it's being done well. I'm sure that in most of your churches, there is something happening in seniors' ministry. And maybe we'll talk about that later. So look now at the next page, if you will. Transitions and Fears. This page was written, incidentally, by Carol Wynn. He and I developed that top paragraph, as I recall, and he wrote the whole rest of it. But Carol Wynn is one of the ministers at 10th Presbyterian Church. And in the second sentence on the page, it says, "A major transition to be negotiated is the move from employed to retired. An ultimate transition is that from living to dying to death." It's an ultimate transition, and you're all going to do it. You may not all know it. You may die instantaneously somewhere, but you're all going to go through that experience. Can't avoid it. Now we can talk about the second coming, and maybe that'll happen, and we should talk about it and realize it may happen. But we have 2,000 years of experience to indicate to us that we're all going to go through that transition. I'm going to read for you the list of transitions here. These are transitions that seniors go through. And I would like you, mentally, that's all you can do, to attach stress points to each of these transitions. You've seen stress scales where a certain trauma comes into a person's life, and there's so many points that you get for that. And when those points add up to a certain number, then that indicates this person's really under terrible tension. Put stress points on this, on this list. Evaluate each of these stresses. Maybe mentally it'd be easier to do it A, B, C. A is a really great stress. B is a moderate stress. C is a very small stress. Limitations of fixed income. Most of us who retire fall into fixed income. Fixed income goes down because, of course, expenses go up. Restricted physical activities, absence of friends. Even the best of friends can't go to each other's funerals. Abandonment by family. I, years ago, was involved in a seminar for deacons. It was in Pittsburgh. Can't remember the details of it, but I remember a nurse who was there saying that she would estimate, she worked in a nursing home and had worked in nursing homes, that 90% of the people in the nursing homes that she knew never received a visit from anyone ever. Now maybe that number's high, probably is, but I suspect that number's higher than Christians ought to let it be. Abandonment by family, doubts of God's care, loneliness, loss of hobbies, deteriorating joy in activities, issues with children. You putting stress points on all these? Death of loved one and friends, rising medical costs. I went to see a childhood friend, a boy I used to play basketball with on our church basketball team in West Philadelphia, in the hospital day before yesterday. He has Parkinson's. He's had it 10 years, I guess. If I knew you knew him, I would not say this, but I don't think he's going to live very long, but he may. He may recover and get walking again. I think it's unlikely, but of course possible. And I was talking to his wife, and I asked her about coverage for nursing home care, which is where he will probably go when he comes out of the hospital. If indeed he comes out of the hospital, he will need to learn to walk again. And he doesn't have the strength to do that, at least not at this time. However, she said, well, there's 2 weeks coverage, I think she said, and I should know the details of this, but I don't. 2 weeks coverage from Medicare, and then there's 80 days coverage because she has supplemental insurance. And if you're going to minister to seniors, you need to know what supplemental insurance is. There's 80 days coverage from that. That makes 100 days, more or less. And then it's $7,000 a week for nursing home care.
Wow.
$7,000 a week. Now, I would talk to somebody yesterday. I went to see somebody in a nursing home, not an older person, but a person with severe disabilities. He said his mother's in a nursing home, and it's $4,000 a month. Did I say a week? I meant to say a month. I'm sorry.
Okay.
If I said week, it's wrong. $7,000 a month.
Yeah.
$4,000 a month in this other nursing home. But if you get a shower, it's $12. And if you get pills, it's $10 for the services. So it's $4,000 a month plus every service. So most of us don't have that kind of financing. And you can get long-term care insurance, but it's very expensive. And at least the writer of that page in the manual that's going around suggests not getting it because you don't even know if it's going to apply to your situation. Regrets of lost relationships, suspicion of financial ineptness, powerlessness to change things, lack of influence, degenerated hearing and sight, learning new technologies, changing in living arrangements. Now, most seniors go through some or many, if not all, of those transitions. And if you put stress points on those transitions, you come up with a huge total. And that's what seniors are living through. And most of you, virtually all of you, perhaps with one or two exceptions, have not entered into seniorhood yet. But in your communities and in your churches, there are hundreds, even thousands of people that are seniors. Transition and fear. The next page brings us to samples from the churches. And here we begin with things that you can do. Things you can do. And this is where it all becomes practical. And maybe you pick up a suggestion here or there. How thrilling it would be. I mean, I'm nervous about being here today. I'm nervous by you people, by how young you are, and by the fact that you're interested in seniors ministry. I think to myself, every meeting has value. The people that sit there are worth something. There's an hour of your time is worth something, $10. And there are 25 of you here, more or less. It's $250. But these are valuable hours. These just aren't trivial hours in some meeting. Your time is worth $100 an hour times 25. That's $2,500 this meeting is worth, more than that. How about if out of this meeting, each church that's represented would come up with one idea for something you'd like to do in seniors ministry? To me, that would be an exciting thing to have happened. One idea for each church. So maybe out of some of these suggestions, you will find something that will be of value to you in your church. And I'd be excited about that. Just one idea. And you might say, that was kind of a dull meeting. We didn't make any progress. We didn't do anything. But you went home with one thing that you said, we'll try that in our seniors program. Or we'll start a seniors ministry. Wow. That'd be worth 5 points, not just one. One of the things, for example, I thought of this before we look at this page. One of the things that that I've done in our church, now we're in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, which is, for those of you that don't know Cherry Hill, it's really just across the river from Philadelphia. I can be in Philadelphia in 12 minutes from Cherry Hill. So we're in part of the Philadelphia complex. We've done trips with the seniors. Now, we don't have a lot of seniors in our church, and I always wanted to be a Greyhound bus driver. The longer I've been in the ministry, the more sure I am that I should have been a Greyhound bus driver. Really, I wanted to be a bus driver, and I still do. I see a Greyhound bus, and I almost start drooling. I just love to drive a Greyhound bus. But we have a church van.
You know why that is.
Pardon me?
You know why that is.
Why?
Because all your problems are behind you. I was a school bus driver.
Oh, okay. I don't want to drive a school bus. No interest in a school bus. Don't want to drive a local bus. I want to drive a Greyhound bus or a bus like it that goes places and pulls into terminals and collects fares and tickets and baggage. And anyway, we have a church van. So I do my thing and drive the church van, and I've driven the seniors. And I was thinking just yesterday, I wrote a list here of the places we've been because I thought some of you would be from the Philadelphia area and maybe this would be these would be ideas for you. What have we done with our seniors? Well, we took the van. It's a 15-passenger van. And I made a list, as I say, of some of the places we've been. We went to Bushkill Falls. Now, if you don't know where Bushkill Falls is, there's no sense you writing that down or even caring about it. But it made a great trip, and we took hoagies and had our lunch there at Bushkill Falls. We went to Washington and did the new Native American Museum and then drove out to the new air and space thing and out near Dulles Airport. We went to Baltimore and did Inner Harbor and did the little taxi boat ride and did that and then had supper in Baltimore. We went to Annapolis and had a tour of Annapolis. We went to Hershey and did the Hershey Hotel and the gardens, and I think we went into the Hershey Museum or wherever where they take you around in the little ride. We didn't do Hershey Park. We went one day to Princeton Seminary and did a walking tour of Princeton Seminary and saw some of the plaques honoring some of the martyrs who graduated from the seminary and honoring people like Charles Hodge and other people. Then we went to the Princeton Cemetery, which has been called the Westminster Abbey of the United States, where there are people like Jonathan Edwards buried and the Hodges and the Alexanders and Calvin Coolidge and but a number of famous theologians from the seminary in early history are buried there. And then we came to Westminster Seminary and had lunch, came here, which was the occasion when I was here. And the then president of the seminary, Sam Logan, met with us and talked about old Princeton and Westminster. And we had a great day of doing Princeton Seminary and Westminster Seminary. One day we did the Constitution Center in downtown Philadelphia and then went to some of you know Valley Green Restaurant, which is near here, which is a quaint place that used to be a stagecoach stop. I made a list of places. One day we went to the Wheaton Glassworks in South Jersey and then went to Ocean City for lunch. Now, these are just things we did, and maybe your church could do that. If you don't have a van, maybe you could rent one for $100 for a day, or take two station wagons or something. But here are some suggestions on this page now that's from Section 7 of the manual, page B. These come from a bulletin insert that's supplied by a Christian Education and Publications Committee to churches that want to use it. And I went through those bulletin inserts over a period of about 15 years and adopted these and gave credit to Bob Logan, who's the one who developed the bulletin insert. You'll see under Ministry by Church Members, for example, Adopt a Grandparent Program. Church members are adopting residents of a local nursing home as foster grandparents. Members are reminded that to adopt someone is a serious commitment. Let me suggest to you, which I ought to suggest to our own church, don't just have worship services at the nursing home once a month, which is what our church has done for, as far as I know, 45 years. As far as I know, for all the years of its existence, our church has had nursing home worship services on Sundays once a month. Maybe they used to do it twice a month, I don't know. Still have them once a month. But what this would suggest to you is that you develop relationships with people in the worship service and then go see them regularly and support them. And if you don't know whom it is that you ought to go see, find the chaplain or the head nurse or somebody and say, are there any people in here that are Protestant, because you probably should ask about that, who don't have any visitors, and start to go see them. Now, you do need to be committed to that kind of thing, and that is you don't just start it and drop it, because that would be discouraging and disappointing, perhaps, for the person that you're going to see. But what a great ministry that is, and that ministry is available to everybody. I mean, there are nursing homes all over the place. It seems to me it'd be a pretty rare church that would say, well, there's no nursing home anywhere near us, or there's no nursing home we'd get to. That's pretty unlikely. I don't know how it would be in a totally secular nursing home if a church came in and said, we'd like to adopt some people, and we might want to share some spiritual things. That's why I say ask for Protestants. Because you shouldn't be able to offend a Protestant if you say Christ died for your sins. They may not know that, but it shouldn't be terribly offensive to them if you do it graciously, and of course after you get to know them and so on. So ministry by church members. Look down in the next section, ministry by church groups. When the death of a church member occurs, a member of the care cluster committee goes immediately to the home and finds out the needs and wishes of the family, contacting the committee to meet those needs. In the manual, you'll see this listed. It's not a page that I've distributed to you, but in the manual, there are pages. I'll tell you where they are. Under three, spiritual issues. T and U, what to do when a death occurs, what to do when a loved one dies. We had a recent death in our church. We've had three deaths this year in our church, which is a number. It's not a big church, but many of the older people go to Quarryville and they don't therefore die at the church. But the man who became then the widower handled it extremely well. I mean, he's been very gracious and seems upbeat. I'm sure he's got his bad times. He's supported by a strong family. And his son, incidentally, is an admiral who works near Annapolis. But at any rate, it would have been helpful if somebody in the church, probably a deacon, but maybe a woman in the church. I don't want to generalize here too badly, but the deacons in the church are charged with the ministry of mercy, but to a significant degree, I think the women in the church do it. Now, that's a generalization. Neither part of it is totally true, and I do recognize that. But how wonderful it would be when in this case, when Mrs. Eastberg died, if someone from the deacons or among the women in the church had gone to him and had a checklist. There are checklists available in the manual, but they're available elsewhere. Checklist, here are things you must do now. Here are things that can wait a week. Here are things that can wait a month. Here are things that need to be taken care of. Here are things we will take care of. We will plan a lunch. We will plan the food for after the funeral. We will plan to have two people in your home during the funeral, which, of course, is because that's a high time for burglary of homes, or at least it always has been historically, because people can look in the paper and see the funeral is at 11 o'clock, so they know no one's home. So we will have somebody there at the time of the funeral. We have somebody on the deacons who will go to the funeral home with you to help make arrangements. I don't know whether you've ever picked out a casket for a loved one. It's hard. You know what's hard about it? Not to waste money. It really is hard. At least I have found it to be hard. You want mother or father to have the nicest casket that you can possibly afford. Now, the undertaker makes his money selling you caskets. This is not a good combination to have in the same room. Undertakers, by and large, I assume, are totally scrupulous, not unscrupulous, but scrupulous, careful. Don't bring unbear pressure to bear on you. So I'm not picking on undertakers, don't mean that. But the pressure is incredible to buy the nice mahogany $12,000 casket, which is the nicest piece of furniture your mother ever will have had. And I know what the pressure is. And I can remember asking the undertaker, well, how about the felt ones? They're just wood covered with felt. And then I asked about the wooden ones. And well, they're down in the basement. And we worked our way down. It's very difficult at that time. And you're not thinking clearly. How helpful it would be to have a care committee. This particular church had a care cluster committee to deal with families in the church when a death occurs, and to be helpful in any of the many ways help can be rendered. Turn the page over, if you will. Ministry by individuals. Now, there are all kinds of examples on this page, so I'm skimming over a whole lot of examples if you're looking for examples. But look at the second example on ministry by individuals. A church member has volunteered to become the church nurse, having an office within the church, among other duties, visiting members who are shut-ins. There is a book, it's a little paperback, but it's excellent, that I've read through. It's called The Church Nurse. And this is a growing field. Some churches have full-time employees called, well, whatever they call it. The churches that I know that have most of these call them parish nurse because they're Roman Catholic churches. I was in a Roman Catholic church in North Philadelphia and talking to one of the priests, and he mentioned their parish nurse. They have full-time parish nurse who goes around and ministers to the seniors and the shut-ins. Now, maybe your church can't afford a full-time parish nurse. Probably not. I'd almost say, I don't want to indicate that we're going to gamble on this, but I would bet that you can't afford a full-time parish nurse. And your presbytery probably is not creative enough to hire a parish nurse by cooperating among the churches. The PCUSA, the United Presbyterian Church, is so far advanced beyond us in seniors ministry that we ought to be embarrassed. They have presbytery representatives of senior ministry in every presbytery. They have an office in Louisville related to senior ministry. They have synod executives that deal with seniors ministry. They're so far beyond us. But our presbyteries probably are not going to hire parish nurses that could then work in all of our churches with shared expenses. However, your church probably could have a parish nurse, that is a woman or man in the church who's a nurse, who every Sunday morning has a room in the church where he or she, probably a she, takes blood pressure. That's all. And asks about prescriptions. Are you taking your prescriptions? Let me see your list. Are you current? Mary, I think you ought to go see your doctor about your blood pressure. I think you ought to go see your doctor about your complaint with your arm. No liability. I can't imagine how there'd be any legal liability. You're not doing medical things. Just supportive help of a medical type. What a wonderful opportunity for a nurse in your congregation to do simple things like that for seniors. Take their blood pressure. Maybe an hour during the week, although then they have to get there. So better, probably a time. I don't like to say during Sunday school because then it takes some people out of Sunday school, but maybe during Sunday school where they would get up and walk and take 10 minutes in the office with the parish nurse and go back to Sunday school. So I'm just suggesting to you there's an option of something your church might do, church nurse. On the next page, which is 7U, this would be 7U in the manual that's going around. There is a suggestion that you might want to follow up on, Seniors Sunday or Seniors Week. Here there are listed things that we can't go into, like the purpose of a Seniors Week. You can guess what they might be. Cautions. Intergenerational emphasis. Intergenerational is a good word, and we need to use it. You remember I began by talking about this railroad train, all these cars? We need communication within those cars, people talking to each other, between those cars. We need boomers talking to the silent generation, and we need communication among all of those cars. That is, we need little children in the beginners department, ministering to seniors in the nursing homes, coming in and doing skits, singing songs. This is biblical. It's not only biblical, there's an organization called Generations United. They have a website. I think it's just gu.org. They're committed to organizing all of the organizations in the world that deal with intergenerational ministry. We need intentional intergenerational interaction. Intentional intergenerational interaction. And so Seniors Week can be an effort to do that. The date. The PCA, these pages were written a year ago, 2 years ago. The PCA has approved 2006, the first Sunday after Labor Day, as Senior Citizens Day. That's going to be approved again this year. It was approved last year. So Senior Sunday is the first Sunday after Labor Day in the PCA. What can you do? You can at least have your minister stand up and say, this is Senior Sunday, and we want to say hello to all our seniors. You can do something. Indicate it's Seniors Day. You can do more than that, but you could at least do that. If I were a senior, I'd say, well, it's not much, but appreciate it. Seniors Sunday, maybe Seniors Week. And on the back of the page, there are a number of things that you might want to do during Seniors Day or Seniors Week in terms of a specific project. Easy to do. So if every one of you were to go out of here today and say for all of your churches, we're going to have a Senior Sunday this year, and we're going to start planning for it right now. It's no big deal, necessarily. Could be, but doesn't have to be. You can start planning for it now, get it on the calendar, get the minister or whoever's preaching that particular Sunday. Maybe it'd be a senior to bring the message, a senior elder, I don't know. Get them to preach on some relevant subject. I gave you a whole pile of Bible verses on the imperatives to senior ministry. Pick one, pick them all. Or preach on some senior in the Bible and what he did. How old was Moses when he began to work? 80 years. How old was Aaron, his brother? That's a tougher question, 83. How old was Caleb when he said, I want that mountain over there? 85. He wanted to conquer another mountain. He was 85 years old. Preach on one of those subjects. Anna, Simeon. What did Mary do? What was her chore for God? You know what her job was? And it's an important task for many seniors to let somebody else take care of her. Remember at the cross? How old was Mary at the cross? Well, she was a teenager when Jesus was born, probably, so 17. And he died when he was 33. 17 and 33 makes her 50 at the death of Jesus. Now, people used to live as long as they do now. Some of that's in our manual. It's growing a little bit, but people used to live as long, but not as many did. It was tough to maneuver your way through all the problems. I mean, you got appendicitis, I assume you died. You broke a leg, compound fracture, you're dead, I assume, in the ancient world. And you had animals and terrorists and all kinds of things to worry about. But at 50, Mary was probably aging. It's kind of not a gracious thing to think about, but no dental care, no doctors to help her. 50 years old, she's getting older. And her chore was to let John take care of her. Woman, behold your son. Son, behold your mother. So we all have our chores, and in the Bible, older people are busy doing things. And you need to encourage seniors in ministry. And that brings us to our last several pages. Examples. Let me read the verse at the top. This is ministry by seniors now. This is a forgotten ministry. We talk about ministering to seniors, but have you ever given thought to the fact that most of us seniors today are still upright and healthy and able to move around and do things, and one of the things we desperately need is to feel useful? What do you think it's like to feel useless? Maybe some of you have that experience and find it depressing. And then you get busy with something. It's tough. But what do you think it's like to feel useless? Useless to your family, useless to others, useless to yourself. So ministry by seniors is really a ministry to seniors. But what an untapped, largely untapped, not totally, of course, What an untapped resource in the church not to use seniors. It's crazy. It makes absolutely no sense. Read the verse at the top. The righteous will flourish like a palm tree. They will grow like a cedar of Lebanon. They will still bear fruit in old age. They will stay fresh and green, proclaiming, "The Lord is upright. He is my rock. And in him there is no wickedness at all." Now, what can you do? Well, all kinds of things. Down in the middle, number five. This was a list compiled by Ian Crichton, who was, and as far as I know, still is a chaplain in retirement home in Lima, I get them mixed up, in Pennsylvania, Hour 1. One of the things seniors can do is visit, number six. Since life experience contributes so much to empathy, seniors can be very effective in visiting people who are ill and discouraged. Number 10, telephone contact ministry. This is something shut-ins can do. Availability during the day makes seniors ideal for contacting seniors on a daily basis or mothers with small children. On the back, number 16, correspondence ministry. That item talks about writing letters to missionaries and servicemen and others. And it downplays email, but what a wonderful blessing the email is. How unfortunate it is that so many seniors are not computer literate. What a wonderful opportunity it is that we have senior high kids that could teach seniors how to use a computer well enough to do the email thing. And to write to missionaries and to write to each other. And to be on all kinds of lists that you don't want to be on, but some of them do, because sometimes, I'm speaking from experience, we're even happy to get junk mail. And so what a wonderful thing email can be. And we have seniors that are computer illiterate. So maybe your church needs to buy a senior a computer. What's that cost? I don't know, $1,000. You know, with a printer and so on, and then get somebody in there to teach them how to do the email thing. And there are books. One of them is recommended in the manual on seniors learning to do computer. I find those books kind of useless. I need somebody there, namely one of my children or son-in-law, to tell me, do this, do that. And then I pick it up and I learn it. So what a wonderful opportunity for seniors. Now, the last page, we're not going to do much with the blue page, not going to do anything, in fact. The last page has to do with where to begin. Let's assume that you have no seniors ministry. Now, that's probably an inappropriate assumption. All of you probably have some seniors ministry. But let's assume you have some. This page is called Where to Begin. It's really from up in the beginning in the manual, section one, after the introduction, mobilizing for ministry. You begin with prayer. Now, if I wanted to start a seniors ministry in your church, if I were you, I'd probably go to a couple of seniors and say, I want to start a seniors ministry. Will you pray for it? And I will keep in touch with you. I will communicate with you with regard to the ministry to keep you up to date. So every week you let them know what's going on so they can pray intelligently about it and find two or three people who will pray for it. And then fourthly here, I mentioned creativity. You need creativity to do this. It's not just going to happen. You probably can't find a book that says this is how to do seniors ministry in your neighborhood, and you need flexibility. You're dealing with people. Now, I would suggest that you consider the area that I mentioned secondly. Pass, consider the issues, the opportunities. Be an initiator or find one. One person is the key. What your church needs, if you have no seniors ministry, in my opinion, this is how I would go about it. You need one person who says, I really want to see seniors ministry happen in our church. One person. That's all. And I'm going to see it through. It may take me a year or 2 years or 5 years or 10 years to really get this thing going in any way that's helpful. But I want to see a seniors ministry happen in my church. And you're going to wrestle with it, and you're going to explore, and you're going to do surveys down at the bottom of the page. You'll see surveys. You're going to work with it. And maybe along the way, you'll find somebody else that you say to yourself, I can share this with Mary or Bill or John, and the two of us can work on it together. Now, that has to be somebody who's as committed to it as you are. I think one of the hazards in our churches is the first thing we want to do is commit it to a committee. Or we understand the deacons are charged with the ministry of the mercy, so we run to the deacons and we say, this is yours, I'd really like to see you do it. And some committees can be like a brick wall or a morass or a swamp, and you get into it and you're dealing now, it could be, with people who don't think about seniors ministry between the meetings. They just come to the meetings and, oh, seniors ministry, let's talk about seniors ministry. And after a year or two of that, you've lost the vision and the dream and it's all gone. It's all gone. It's committed to a committee and it's gone. Now, I don't want to disparage deacons. I don't want to simply work around them. They're charged with the ministry of mercy and seniors ministry. And I don't want to disparage women in the church and WIC. But I want to be careful about my dream, and I want to guard it and protect it and see to it that that dream comes to fruition. And I don't want to give it premature birth so that it doesn't live, that it doesn't live. And then on the back of the page, I suggest, among other things, you should do surveys in your neighborhood. You should do surveys in your church. How do you do a survey in your church? Well, you Xerox 5 pages and send it out and ask the seniors to check boxes. No, you don't. You go to seniors, just a couple you start with, and you visit with them. And you don't have a checklist. You have in your mind some things you'd like to ask, but you just converse with them. What do you want? What do you need? And then you come out of that meeting and perhaps sit in your car and jot as many things down as you can. But you have a personal visit with the seniors in your church, and you're getting to know them and the things they want and they need. Maybe they don't want to go to Bushkill Falls, but maybe they would love to have. There's a church in Levittown near here that has a program. I get this wrong every time. It's called Wheels to Meals. And what they do, I think twice a year, is go pick up the seniors and drive them to a luncheon in a special room at a local restaurant. And they found that lunch is better than supper because it's late for the seniors and they'd rather do it at the lunchtime. So they have this thing called Wheels to Meals. So maybe you need to find out that that's what the seniors want, but you find out by asking the seniors. Okay? I want to do one other thing. I didn't, and then we're done. I was going to ask you to complete this, but you can complete that for yourself. And we're expiring anyway. Expiring is the wrong word to use. I gave you, we've been an hour and a quarter, and I've done all the talking. I apologize for that, because I know some of you are just dying to tell us what your church does, and I appreciate that. I gave you a stapled 3 pieces of paper together. And on that is a summary. 2 years ago, I guess it's just a little over 2 years, I was at a seminar, Ministry of Mercy seminar in Atlanta, one of these big national meetings. I had a meeting like this, I guess. And I asked people to fill in a sheet like this. And I made that list from that sheet. So if you need suggestions, there are some suggestions of things you could do. I talked in a meeting not long ago about this, and somebody said, you know what we do? They were just like, our church rehearses every week in a nursing home. That's where they have their rehearsal, in a local nursing home. Of course, the people in the nursing home think it's great. It's a musical presentation. It's a choir rehearsing. At any rate, there's a whole list of things that churches are doing. Now, some of them won't be clear to you because they're not clearly described and defined, but others will be. And so if you need suggestions, there are some. And I think at the back there is a list of the reasons these things are not likely to happen, the things you plan to do. Why aren't these things going to happen? And most of them have to do with priorities and schedule. They don't have to do with money. Money isn't the issue, by and large. Say to yourself in the beginning, money is not the issue. If I need money, I'll give it myself, or I'll find somebody else. Money's not usually the issue in terms of seniors ministry. It's time, it's commitment, it's energy, it's vision, it's creativity, it's capturing the train image that we're all moving along towards seniorhood, but it's also, more importantly, catching the biblical image that we are called to minister to strangers, that is, people from other countries who are living in our midst, orphans, that is, children whose parents have abandoned them, and thirdly, ministering to seniors, catching that biblical image. It's that. Okay, we're done. Does anybody have something you'd like to say? Yes.
I love at the very back of the book, there's a section on people sharing with each other, seniors sharing with each other, and with just finding either structured ways or extended time ways for people to actually to get to know each other.
Sure.
And affirm each other, maybe even doing video histories of people, making ethical wills together or apart, that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Unless people are really feeling very connected, attached, it's more programmed.
Mm-hmm. An ethical will is a will that you leave to those who follow you, and it includes your values, the things that are important to you. And the other kind of issue that was brought up is one of the things that's going on in the secular world among seniors now is it's normally described this way, telling life's stories, where you write down your life story, or sort of a mini biography, share it with your children. And a wonderful way to involve the intergenerational thing is to get children to interview seniors. I grew up in Philadelphia. Last summer, the Phillies lost their 10,000th game. I have been alive for most of them. You don't know what life is like for those of us that have gone through all those years of depression. And I can tell my children, my grandchildren, anyone that cares to interview me about my first game in 1941 at what was then Shibe Park, a doubleheader, Phillies against the Dodgers. 41, that's whatever that is now, 67 years ago, my first game.
One other thing is that I just scanned the book. There is mention of money as issue for some seniors. Obviously, there's lots of wealth, but there's also lots of poverty. And I don't know if you think in terms of advocacy for seniors or helping people move into their senior years with as much grace and as much savings or an alternative plan in terms of cottage industries or some kind of entrepreneurship after their formal retirement so they're able to afford the things that they need to live. Because I'm living in a building that's a co-op building that was mostly started by people in the 60s, and many of the people in my building, I would say maybe 65% of the people in my building are more than 70 years old. There's a lot of younger people, but also many older people, and people are aging out of their savings significantly.
Absolutely.
There is a low-level panic among women who are in their 70s, 80s, 90s in my building, especially, facing the loss of the partner or whatever. They're just scared out of their wits that they're going to not be able to stay in their place or so getting some creativity into that situation would just emotionally help people significantly. We're thinking they're going to be homeless next.
In that book, there is a page that actually I developed. I didn't develop all the book by any means, but there's a budget for seniors. I looked in hundreds of books, literally hundreds of books on budgeting. The library near us has books on budgeting, but no budget for seniors, budget for teenagers, budget for this. So I developed one for seniors because seniors have unique problems. And also, you should all know, and again, this is in terms of advocacy, you should all know, and I'm going to close with this because we need to, and some of you would probably like to eat lunch. There is a thing called an AAA, Area Agency on the Aging. AAA, Area Agency on the Aging. There is one in every county of the United States. Some counties are combined where two or three counties use the same Area Agency on the Aging. I have been to the one in Camden, in Philadelphia, in Charlotte, in Pittsburgh, in Anchorage, Alaska, when we were there on vacation. These are wonderful resources of services that are available for seniors. And the people that are there to help seniors. Just go into the area agency on the aging, find the one in your area, and pick up the brochures that are in the lobby. That is all the people in your area, in your county, that are offering services. I didn't realize that in many counties there is free transportation for seniors. Not every county, but some. They'll come and get you and take you to where you want to go. Free. And it's not income-based. I didn't realize that in many areas of the country, the mailman will look in your box to see if you picked up the mail. And if you didn't, he will ring the doorbell and make sure you're okay. U.S. Postal Service. So the Area Agency on the Aging is an incredible resource that if you want to be involved in seniors ministry, you ought to know about. Because it opens up all of the things that are available to people, particularly with low income or declining income, but also some services that are available to everybody. We really ought to close in fairness. Let's bow together for prayer. We thank you, our Father, for your grace and mercy and fellowship we have in you in regard to ministry to others. We thank you for one another. I pray for the churches that are here represented, that we might serve in the ministry of mercy in a way that will honor Jesus and his mercy. In his name we pray. Amen. Okay, thank you all.
Thank you.